This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
If we clean up air pollution, the weather gets hotter and wilder. From Norway, Dr. Bjørn Hamseth explains the stakes. Then from Harvard, Dr. Francesca Domenici reveals shocking new science. Just a short exposure to bad air kills seniors. I'm Alex. This is Radio EcoShock, clearing the air. A best of Radio EcoShock replay. We all know air pollution is killing millions of people around the world. Nobody likes smog. But what happens if we clean it up? If electric cars reduce carbon pollution, if governments finally act to stop climate change gases, well, we get hotter. In fact, new science suggests the initial burst of heating from cleaner air could come close, in the worst-case scenario anyway, to the amount of warming we've already experienced. We'll talk about that, because here to explain is Dr. Bjørn Halvard Samset. He is the research director at CICERO, the Center for International Climate and Environmental Research, that's in Norway. Bjørn is a physicist. He's widely versed in climate science. He's often quoted in Norwegian media. And Bjørn specializes in extreme precipitation and the role of atmospheric aerosols in a changing climate. The new paper, Climate Impacts from a Removal of Anthropogenic Aerosol Emissions, was published in January 2018 in Geophysical Research Letters. Bjørn Samset, a warm welcome for Radio EcoShock.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Several years ago, Dr. James Hansen, the former head of NASA's Goddard Space Center, he warned more of a degree of heating is in the pipeline, as he called it, and that sort of delayed responses to emissions already in the atmosphere. Is that what this paper set out to test? How does this relate to Hansen's in-the-pipeline theory?
Well, there are actually two quite separate concepts. The idea of Hansen's paper is really this thermostat. I mean, imagine you have your house, you have a new wonderful house, you know there's a thermostat on the wall, and you want it to get a little bit warmer. So you turn your thermostat up, say, one or two notches. That's what we've done with CO2. We've turned the thermostat of the Earth up a couple of notches. But how warm does it get, and how long does that take? So in your house, you're going to have to wait maybe a couple of hours for the thing to actually heat up. On the Earth, we really don't know how far we've gotten in this heating so far. So we in climate change terms, we don't know the energy imbalance of the Earth. We've started accumulating more energy because of all this extra greenhouse gas. We don't know how far that heating has gotten. So that's more what James Hansen was getting at. In this new paper, we are working on something else that James Hansen has also been kind of warning about, and that's that there's a separate climate impact or impact of our anthropogenic emissions. Those are from aerosols, which work, at least most of the aerosols, they're small particles suspended in the atmosphere, basically dust. They work completely counter to greenhouse gases. Greenhouse gases act by trapping heat from the atmosphere, retaining it in the atmosphere for somewhat longer than they would otherwise have done before they escaped to space. Aerosols, they reflect sunlight as it comes back in. So they're basically miniature mirrors floating around in the atmosphere. They reflect back the sunlight, which will, as you can guess, cool the Earth. So that's a slightly different thing, but they are about of the same magnitude, these two effects. That's true.
Can you give us a brief introduction to some of the aerosols that your group studied?
Yeah, well, aerosols, that's basically everything that's of a relatively small, 1 micrometer about size in the atmosphere. So if you have dust in your yard and wind blows it up into the air, that's one type of aerosol. Sea spray is another type of aerosol. Those are the natural types. They've always been there. They always will be. But then our industrial activities, and in particular our use of fossil fuels, they've added some new types of aerosols. In particular, one of them is sulfate. So they're sulfur compounds that they're emitted as just small chemical compounds, but then in the atmosphere through various processes, they grow to larger sizes. And once they have reached a certain particle size, they can actually, water can condense onto these things. They become small, basically small water droplets with a small sulfate nucleus in the middle. And these things, they can then start reflecting sunlight. So sulfate is one thing. Another one is black carbon or various compounds of carbon that you get when you have incomplete combustion. So you burn some wood in your yard, you're going to see all the smoke coming up. That's a combination of various types of carbon. But the blackest of that, which is this black stuff that comes out of a dirty diesel engine, for instance, if you don't have a good particle filter on there, a lot of black smoke is going to come out. That really black smoke, that's black carbon. There's actually quite a lot of that being emitted from diesel cars, from coal fire plants, etc., around the world every year. So these are kind of the two main aerosol types that we studied. We also looked at a little bit at what's called organic carbon, which is the rest of the stuff that comes out of wood smoke. But that seems to have a smaller effect. It's really the sulfate and the black carbon. Those are the two main aerosol types from our pollution that we consider.
Why did your team think it was important to find out how much cooling we're getting from this pollution and what would happen if we managed to stop?
Well, we know that air pollution, as you said in the introduction, is, well, it's obviously a bad thing. It's killing a lot of people. It's something that we really want to clean up. And in parts of the world, in Europe and in the U.S., we've had the various versions of the Clean Air Acts. We really have cleaned up our act, as it were. There's a lot less air pollution here than there's been before. So we know that can be done, technically, and we also know it probably will be done for health reasons. Now, the main aerosol pollution today is in other parts of the world. There's a lot in some in Africa, some in the Middle East, but quite a lot over in South Asia, India and China. They have quite a lot of it. You know, if you've been to Beijing or Delhi or any of these cities, they really have issues with air pollution, which they obviously are trying to tackle. So whatever we do with greenhouse gas emissions, this aerosol pollution is going to get cleaned up for other reasons. So in particular, now that we have the Paris Agreement and we've decided to stay within 2 degrees of global warming, maybe even 1.5 degrees, it gets really relevant. Those are to say, well, 2 degrees is a lot of warming, but still relative to what we were warning about just a few years back, which was 4 or 5 degrees warming by the year 2100. And this is actually relatively moderate, which means that this aerosol perturbation or the effect of cleaning up air pollution is not just a small effect anymore. It's a relatively significant thing. So if you do the sensible thing and clean up our air, for one thing, the world as a whole gets warmer, so it makes it harder to reach the Paris target. We've known this for a long, long time, so that part is not a surprise. It's baked into all the scenarios. But what is somewhat difficult to assess is the regional effect of this, because as I said, most of the aerosols currently come from Southeast Asia. So that means that the big effect is really there, because if you emit CO2 or even methane, these greenhouse gases, they get transported for quite some time in the atmosphere. So they distribute pretty well throughout the entire global atmosphere. The CO2 concentration where I'm sitting is the same as where you're sitting, basically wherever we are. But the aerosol concentration is not. The aerosols only stay in the air for a couple of days, 3, 4, 5 days maybe at the most, which means they don't travel very far. So when I say that, well, the aerosols, if you remove all the aerosols, it might heat the world by 0.5 degree or maybe even 1 degree if we're unlucky. That hides a big, big, big effect that most of this global mean effect is actually concentrated around South Asia. That's the part of the world that's going to get the biggest effect, both on heating, and then as you lose the aerosol heating, then the surface of East Asia is going to heat quite a lot. That affects precipitation, that affects extreme rainfall, et cetera, et cetera. So then it's going to have a large climate impact. So that's really what we were getting at, trying to find this regional distribution of what's going to happen if you do clean up the aerosols.
If I understood your results correctly, you offer a range of between 0.5 degree C warming and 1.1 degree C warming are possible without that air pollution being there. How did you arrive at the lower number, the 0.5 degree C warming? What has to happen for us to have less of an effect?
Well, let me just say that for this research, we did what we often do in climate science. We took the climate models and we gave them as big a kick as you can. So it's in this sense, we checked what's the impact of really removing all of our aerosol emissions, all of our sulfate emissions from our industry, all the black carbon emissions, and also a lot of the organic carbon, which means that we have to would have to cut a lot of the biomass burning, which comes from cooking, etc. That's not in any way realistic, just like cutting all greenhouse gases is unfortunately not realistic for quite some time. So this is really an upper limit. It's really seeing how big of an effect are we really having on the climate. But this range is because we ran four different climate models from four groups around the world, so four really fundamentally different models with different processes. They're state-of-the-art models run at relatively high resolution, so it's kind of the same models that were used for the previous IPCC report, for instance. So they're relatively up-to-date models. But as you then mentioned, they give relatively different answers, even though we changed the conditions in the model in precisely the same way. And most of that difference really lies in our uncertainty about how aerosols affect clouds. Because clouds are a really important player in the energy balance of the Earth. And what happens when you put a lot of aerosols into a cloud? Well, the amount of water in the cloud is not going to change. The water is just there. But this water can condense onto more small particles, which means that the water gets distributed around into more smaller droplets, which makes the cloud whiter. So it reflects more sunlight. So this, when we call it the indirect effect of aerosols. And the aerosol itself has a direct effect. That's this little mirror effect of it reflecting sunlight or even capturing sunlight in the case of black carbon. That's a direct effect. But then this effect on clouds is an indirect effect. And one of the reasons that we chose this particular set of models, or it turned out to be a good choice, because one of them we know has a relatively weak indirect effect or a weak effect of aerosols on clouds, whereas another one has a relatively strong one. So this span between a half degree and just above 1 degree of warming from removing all aerosols really comes from us not knowing very well what happens when aerosols get put into a cloud.
Yes, clouds remain one of the mystery regions that science is still exploring. Now, you mentioned that water vapor requires particles in the air to become raindrops, so to speak, or snow if it's cold enough. I'm wondering, oddball question, does it follow there might be fewer extreme precipitation events in the future hitting big cities if the air is substantially cleaned up because there'd be fewer particles?
Yes, that could follow. That is one hypothesis that's being checked out, though there are other impacts as well from either cooling or heating the surface, because aerosols might actually reduce the impact of this urban heat island effect. So cities being hotter than the area around, we're guessing that affects extreme precipitation, though we really don't have a good answer to that. It's actually being investigated back at CICERO, where I work, in another project, and I know other groups around the world are working on the same thing. And again, just to add to all this fun complexity of the aerosols, it depends on what kind of aerosol you're talking about, because the sulfate aerosols, they will act on clouds like we've been talking about, making those droplets smaller. So yes, that could affect the extreme rainfall rates. Then if your aerosols are black carbon instead, then they will capture the sunlight as they are, or when they're flying around high in the atmosphere, which will heat the atmosphere above the ground, so higher up, so that affects the whole convection pattern, the whole heating pattern of the atmosphere. It changes precipitation or rainfall in different ways again. So aerosols are, I mean, for scientists, they're wonderful to study because they're so complex. There's so many different ways they can interact with the climate. But if you're looking for a straight answer for what is the impact of aerosols on rainfall or extreme rainfall, it's horrendously difficult to get at. So we're working on that one.
Okay. Well, in this paper, you and your co-authors say, quote, "We find a higher sensitivity of extreme events to aerosol reductions per degree of surface warming, in particular over the major aerosol emission regions." What is that process? How can cleaner air pump up warming into more extreme events?
Well, it turns out that's most likely a two-stage effect. At least that's what it looks like in the models. First of all, the effect is that when you have a lot of aerosols, say over parts of East Asia, let's say China, for instance, which is currently really cleaning up its aerosol pollution, they've had a lot of aerosols. This has been
cooling the surface somewhat. Now, remove these aerosols, you're going to get a lot of surface heating there. And surface heating leads to the warmer air aloft as well, so it leads to more precipitation. So that's the first thing. But then the second thing is that extreme precipitation, extreme rainfall, if you heat the Earth just through global warming or any process, then extreme rainfall will increase faster than average rainfall. This is due to the availability of moisture and also availability of energy in the atmosphere. So it all comes down to the energy balance of the atmosphere, because it takes a lot of energy to generate this big average precipitation. But whereas while we feel the extreme rainfall more, it actually takes less energy because there are fewer of these extreme events. So this has been seen both in observations and also in theory, that we know it, theoretically, why it happens, that extreme rainfall increases faster than average rainfall. So when you combine these effects, you see that regionally the ground heats faster because the aerosols are located in one specific region, and then the extreme rainfall increases faster than the average rainfall again. So this is a double effect.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith from the Center for International Climate and Environmental Research in Oslo, Norway. We are talking with Dr. Bjørn Hamset. He's co-author of a new paper explaining that cleaner air could become hotter air. I'm wondering, does the reports from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change include this expected heating from reduced air pollution, as reported in your new paper, when they put out projections that they call their representative pathways?
They do, to some extent. The reduction in aerosols that we expect in the future because of health concerns, and also because when you reduce greenhouse gas emissions, you reduce use of fossil fuel, and that cleans up aerosols as well. That part is included. But these representative concentration pathways, they tend to have pretty similar reduction pathways for the aerosols. So they don't really span the opportunity space. And for health reasons, you can certainly imagine that countries like China and India will want a relatively fast aerosol cleanup if they can. And it looks like China, for instance, certainly can. They are actively reducing their pollution at the moment. And what is then not really well studied in any of these scenarios is what we were trying to get at in our paper, which is this regional distribution. So trying to understand difference in impact of climate change in different parts of the world, if you have different balances between greenhouse gases and aerosols. You have to remember that the last IPCC report was really trying to warn about these business as usual RCP 8.5 scenarios, which is really emit as much as we can for a long time. So really the high end of possible global warming. Even in 2013, when that last Working Group 1 report, so the natural science part of the IPCC report, came out, this was almost seen as the most probable outcome, because there had been no reduction whatsoever of greenhouse gases at all. And this 2-degree scenario was seen as unrealistically low. We would never get there. What has happened in the meantime is that we've had the Paris Agreement. Businesses, industries around the world really started taking climate change seriously. So even though we haven't really started reducing emissions yet, there's a mentality that wasn't there even just a few years back. So things are really happening. So it looks like there's going to be a big drive towards getting to these lower end of global warming. But that makes the aerosols, again, much, much more important. They were seen as a minor perturbation in the last IPCC report, in the sense that they have their whole chapter of their own, aerosols and clouds. I was contributing to that chapter as well, so we certainly did the work properly, and they're very well treated. But still, one saw, rightly, the greenhouse gas emissions. That was the main issue. But now that we are getting momentum behind reducing greenhouse gases, suddenly aerosols start to matter more again. So probably in the next IPCC cycle, we'll have even more focus on different pathways that aerosol mitigation can take.
I'm really interested in your work on regional climate change, because it shows how far we've come. A couple of decades ago, all we could talk about was global climate change, and there's been a lot of work by scientists to try and narrow this down and get the regional work in. And I'm thinking of the earlier paper you co-authored in 2016. It's titled Regional and Seasonal Radiative Forcing by Perturbations to Aerosol and Ozone Precursor Emissions. And that paper suggested a way to time the release of pollution to improve air quality without losing the cooling shield of different aerosols. Here's what you said. For example, reducing summertime emissions of black carbon and wintertime emissions of sulfur dioxide in the more polluted regions is a possible way to improve air quality without weakening the negative radiative forcing of aerosols. Bjorn, can you give us an example of how that could work?
The thing is that aerosols, they have different ways of interacting with the climate. One we've already covered quite extensively, it's interaction with clouds. So imagine you release sulfate aerosols, but you do it in a cloud-free environment, then that effect should be not going to matter. But if you do it at a time of the year when there's a lot of clouds, then it's going to matter a lot more. So if you time your mitigation to be either parts of the year that have a lot of clouds or parts that don't have so much cloud, then you can modulate. You can still keep the cooling while fixing the air pollution for at least certain parts of the year. Black carbon, on the other hand, its climate impact becomes stronger the whiter the surface beneath it becomes. So it kind of gets a double effect because the white, it captures sunlight coming in, but if the sunlight misses the black carbon, it hits the earth and the surface is white, then the sunlight gets reflected back up and then it can hit the black carbon going back up again. So it has a double chance of interacting with solar radiation. So up where I live in Norway, we have a lot of snow now. So everything is white. So black carbon is going to have a big effect now. Whereas in summer, it's a lot darker. We have a lot of dark forests and trees, so it's not going to matter all that much. You can do things like this. You can do kind of clever timing of your mitigation, though I have to say it was suggested that you could do something like that, but it's something that would probably be very difficult in actual practice. But it's an example of the kind of thinking that we might need if it turns out that the impacts of climate change are so severe that we really, really, really do not want to go above 2 degrees. And at the same time, you see that air pollution is so bad that it kills so many people that we really, really have to clean up, then maybe things like this could be ideas, could be ways of arranging it for ourselves so we can hit both targets at once.
As you've said, we know heavily populated regions like New England to some degree, but definitely Shanghai and Delhi, have their own dome of particulates above them. And I'm wondering, does that mean that swings in heat and precipitation and extreme weather could be larger above megacities as aerosols are reduced?
Yes, it does mean that. The aerosols are part of this complex interaction between solar radiation and surface heating, moisture, latent heating, all these effects that act together to produce the microclimates around the big cities. And in extremely polluted cases, aerosols are going to be a major player. So the climate around, say, a totally clean Beijing or clean Delhi is, of course, going to be fundamentally different from the climate around a polluted city. When it is polluted, it's this pollution that you notice first. So of course, you want to get rid of the air pollution, have a clean air city. But on average, you're going to experience then differences in long-term rainfall rates and probably also even extreme rainfall. But how that effect plays out is really going to be extremely local. There we have to go in with regional climate modeling, even weather prediction style calculations for each specific region. That's a tough challenge, but probably should be done for each city where this is relevant, just so you can actually prepare for the climate that is coming after the aerosol cleanup.
I'm wondering if our current path of warming may become so steep and so serious that somewhere a worried scientist might advise top politicians, we can't afford any more legislation to clean up the air right now due to increased heating. And I know President Trump would accept that scientific advice. Is it possible?
Well, I've seen scientists say a lot of strange things, so anything is possible. I would hope that no one does say that, though, of course, it's what you advise someone is always going to be a balance. It would certainly not be be my advice, and I certainly know that our concern for human health and just the lungs of our children, if you will, tends to be a lot higher than climate. So our concern for the climate. So I would guessing it would rather be the other way around, that we have to spend as much money as we can on cleaning up air pollution, and then we can do greenhouse gas emissions next, which is then also problematic in this case, because this extra heating that you would get from removing air pollution, really, its really only main message is that, well, we have to be even tougher on greenhouse gas emissions at the same time as cleaning up the air.
Well, I agree. I think this paper definitely means we need a new way forward. We need to educate and warn the public, and they should understand that a smaller warming due to cleaner air with any disruption, that's not a failure. It's just a price we have to pay for past atmospheric carbon dumping. What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, this is just like really the whole climate change issue. I mean, it's not something previous generations did to us out of malice, right? It's a situation we've put ourselves in because we wanted to create a better society for climate change or the use of fossil fuels. We did this by exploiting the energy reserve that suddenly became available to us. Fossil fuels are wonderful, right? They've given us the society that we live in. But then it turns out they have this side effect of causing a hotter climate, which we're now realizing that we really have to deal with, and we have to do it fast. And we've kind of backed ourselves into a corner because we have so much use for fossil fuels. Now, all these same processes, they are also emitting aerosols. That's a second effect. It's also there. Again, it's not there by malice. It kind of just happened as we go along. But now we're realizing that we have this double, I usually call it a tug of war between the heating from greenhouse gases and the cooling from aerosols. We're trying to get a handle on which side has been winning that tug of war, but both the effects are there, and we just have to deal with them.
We've been speaking with Dr. Bjørn Halvard Samset. He's the research director at the Center for International Climate and Environmental Research in Oslo, Norway. Bjørn is co-author of a new paper warning a cleanup of air pollution could reveal serious warming already hidden in the system. You can find the full paper free online at the Journal for Geophysical Research Letters and find links in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Bjørn, thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Thanks for talking with me.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. If you thought air pollution was cleaned up and regulated for safety by the government, listen up. Smog continues to kill thousands of Americans and likely millions of others around the world every year. But who? And how can we save lives? And what can you learn to protect your own? A massive study from Harvard University adds a surprising new twist. For American seniors, just a short-term exposure to air pollution drives up deaths for the next 2 days. The title is Association of Short-Term Exposure to Air Pollution with Mortality in Older Adults. It was published by the Journal of the American Medical Association, or JAMA. Our guest, Francesca Domenici, is co-author. Educated in Italy, she's been applying statistics to public health problems at Johns Hopkins University and more recently at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, where she is professor of biostatistics. Last March, Domenici became co-leader of a major project called the Harvard Data Science Initiative. Francesca, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I try to keep cool and science-minded, but I admit when I look into lives lost to pollution, I get a little upset. We could save a lot of lives that do matter by warning people that are at risk and cleaning up the air a little bit more. What do you think?
Yes, that's correct. We are now pretty confident, not only through the study that I have led, but through many other studies around the world, that still short-term exposure to fine particulate matter and ozone, even a level below of safety standard, are harmful to human health and increase the risk of death.